Ever wanted to know what it takes to become a successful trader? Alex shares his journey to becoming a trader and interviews successful traders along the way to help you. You're listening to Be the Trader.
Hey everyone, I just want to take a quick moment to let you know I'm partnered with Cobra Trader. They're a great broker, give great discounts to all my listeners, especially if you're a short seller. Check them out, let them know you heard from the show. Hey guys, I just want to take a moment to share with you some awesome news. I just started a newsletter and you're probably like, what's so awesome about that? Well, it's not your typical newsletter because I'm going to give back to you, the people who subscribe to the newsletter. Number one, you will be getting updates on my YouTube exclusive videos, the podcast episodes, and articles and blogs all about trading. But how is it different? I'm going to give back to you guys. I'm going to select randomly different subscribers who are in the newsletter and give them either the opportunity to have a one-on-one call with me. Maybe I'll give them a free trading book, one of my favorite trading books, just to name one, Trading in the Zone. And also, and not only, because there's many, many more ideas that we're going to be doing and implementing. But another idea is maybe win the Billions box set. This popular show on Showtime, Billions, if you don't know about it, definitely look it up because it should be everyone's favorite show if you're a trader. At least it's one of my favorites. So I want to give back to you guys because you guys mean a lot to me. And I just don't want to only provide content, but I want to say thank you, right? And I provide content by saying thank you, but I also want to say thank you by giving back. So thank you guys, and you guys take care. Welcome back, everybody, to Be the Trader. Today, I have a very special guest. If you've been listening to the show, then you know I've been bringing on different guests from Trader TV Live. And today I have Neil, another trader who works with the team, who also you can see him live pretty much every day on YouTube TV, where they show live every day on YouTube or TraderTVLive.com. Check them out. If you haven't yet, make sure to check them out because they share everything. I mean, they pretty much lift the curtain and take trades, tell you why they're trading, tell you what their plan is, show you how they make mistakes sometimes, how they take profits, how they nail trades, and how they miss trades. So it really gives you the idea of what a real trader is. So I'm so excited to have Neil here today. And Neil, thanks for joining me today, my friend.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Alex. It should be a lot of fun. Look, every trader loves to talk shop, so it will probably run on a little long at times. I'll try to do my best to keep it short, but it should be a lot of fun.
Absolutely, man. So let's get started. Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, what got you into this world of trading? Like, where'd you start? Did you already start with the head of, I want to be a trader as a kid, or where were you?
Not at all. I sort of came from a very traditional, like, you know, West Indian background. You got to have a profession, right? So it's like, you know, doctor, lawyer, accountant, engineer. My pops is an engineer. None of those things appealed to me, but I was, you know, good with numbers and whatnot. So I ended up going to school for accounting. Despite doing really well in those courses, after 1 year, I knew that wasn't really something that I wanted to be doing, especially talking to some upper year classmen who had taken jobs in the field. So I transferred into economics, and I was fortunate to have a supportive family. And they were like, you know, my dad's like, what are you going to do with that degree? And I'm like, I don't know. No clue whatsoever, but he still, you know, understood that that's what I enjoyed. And then from there, pure good fortune. Alex, I've known Sean, you talked to before. I've known him since high school, and we went to school in the same university, the same town. So we stayed in touch, of course, and we were literally watching a Toronto Maple Leafs playoff game at a bar with a bunch of friends from high school. And Sean had just started on a prop floor, and he was telling everyone about it. I'm like, okay, well, this sounds pretty cool. I mean, I've never really been the biggest 9-to-5 kind of guy in the world, so I was looking for something different. And he told me about it. And from that point on, I was immediately interested. It was just, you know, the idea of taking, you know, sort of theory and stuff you learn in textbooks, seeing what actually happens in the real market and trying to figure that out. That is like the ultimate sort of puzzle and game day action. And it just sounded so perfect to me that I was instantly hooked on the concept.
And so you said you were studying economics, right? That's what you were saying. And so taking the difference from the books and then in real life, did you come in thinking, okay, you know, maybe I have that background, so I'll be able to like attack this? And were you shocked at what you saw? Like, can you explain that little experience there of coming from school with that background?
Yeah, I think most people who may have come back from that background, they took some business class, you take some economics classes, you learn about the markets from a textbook standpoint, and then you're going to get a culture shock, right? Because everything is good in theory. But the good thing is, you know, when you come into the market, at least supply and demand work. You know, I think when I started at the prop firm, day trading, I was trading a lot of big cap names, and I thought really I would identify trends and then use fundamentals heavily. But as a day trader, I found that it was really more about understanding what drives other people's decisions in the short term in different time frames that was going to actually lead to profitability. And then if you thought there was a particular way that you were going to make money based on your expertise, that's not usually how it works out for a trader. You know, I learned very quickly, it doesn't matter what you think the trader, what kind of successful trader you think you're going to be. There's what you end up being good at and the patterns you end up seeing. And that's just, that's going to supersede everything. Mm. So you have to have an open mind, which, at first I sort of thought I would pigeonhole myself. And thankfully I wasn't too stubborn about it because it turns out what I kind of thought I was going to be as a trader was not the case.
Interesting. So tell me about that. Like what kind of called your name? Like what was something that, I guess, your niche, like did you find it pretty quickly? Like how long did it take you to find what you're good at too?
So again, I'm going to go with blind luck on this one. So I had gotten a profitable in, my second month, I was turning a net profit, but just wasn't much. And this was that doing trend trading. I was trading a lot of Oracle. This is back in 2003, right? So I was trading names like Oracle and AMAT and Cisco. And then it was the risk manager and Sean, our training manager at the time, pulled me aside and said, look, your skill set is really good at knowing when not to take a trade. I was very, so not risk averse, but I just sort of would pick my spots and have very good risk management. And they said, let's have a look at some of these smaller cap names and defined ranges. Take a look at market making as a strategy. Take a look at some of these stocks where you could maybe put in more shares and more defined ranges. And that'll fit your skill set where it is more about not taking a big hit and taking smaller types of wins because that would fill your skill set. So I was approached saying, this is what you should do based on what we're seeing from you. And I can't tell you how much of an advantage that is. So when we're on the show live, I try to let people know this, right? Like, it's not that I was able to get this self-discovery myself. I needed help to figure out what it was that I was good at, or at least to listen to the hints that were there in front of me. So we try to tell that all the time. I'll let people know where I make my mistakes, what I'm good at, what I'm not, and why that matters in certain situations. So for me, it was that pointer. I immediately jumped into a different set of stocks that next month. We had a graduation process. We have to make X amount of dollars before you become a full-time trader. That first month, I graduated. The month after that, I was 3X, and then I was one of the top traders on the floor. And again, I found out about it from a friend. I then got advice as to what I was good at. So you're going to need those assists, and that's why I'm paying it forward.
That's awesome, man. That's very interesting because you had that coach perspective, right? You had someone who was watching you trade, who was able to see what you were good at from an unbiased point of view, and you thought you knew what you were good at, and you were doing well, like you were doing okay, you were growing, you were being successful, but then you get put in this other trajectory, and now you're just booming. And so it's just really interesting that they saw what your strengths and weaknesses are, and it kind of shares some light with a lot of people out there when you're listening. That's probably why it's good to have like a trading accountability buddy. Like they can kind of help you understand where you're at and where you need to be, and maybe you're not good here, maybe you're better there. So when you went to and transitioned and you went to more like small caps or more volatile stocks, I'm assuming with range and set areas of risk, resistance, and support, was it a shift of, because if I remember correctly, you said you were trending, like you were like to hold something, you like to trend at first. Was it hard for you to make that shift to be like, okay, now I'm just in and out like pretty quickly? Like give me an idea of what that was like for you, because someone's probably listening and they're like, man, I'm trying this trend thing and I don't really find success and I kind of want to try this, but I'm scared.
So, and again, this is, and I hate to make the same point, but the truth is the truth.
Yeah.
The other advantage that we had on our trading floor is in our training and training program, often the managers, we still do this today, where it's like find somebody that you can sit next to, bounce ideas off of. So I wasn't the only one that had made that transition. So I'd had the opportunity to go through this with a couple of other trainees at the same time and talk it through. So I was prepared for that change. I thought it would be a difficult one because it's like I just spent 2 months learning this. When you're a prop trader, you're not making any money, right? So I have no income. You have your friends and family. It's like, okay, well, go get a real job, make some real money. Yeah. And here I am starting something new when I kind of had made some progress. But thankfully, because I wasn't going through it alone and I was doing it on a floor, there were other traders who had already made that transition and I could talk to them. And it just so happens, because it was sort of more in my skill set and what I was good at already, that the transition ended up being relatively easy. And I think that's what the risk manager on the floor saw at that time, which was obviously correct.
That's interesting. So, and you made a point of, you know, at the time when you first started trading, this was right out of school. So you kind of had that background of able to lean on the family for a little bit, which is nice, because you probably had less, you still had stress. Don't get me wrong, because you still had family saying, hey, go get a real job, which trust me, with a wife and you're trying to do trading, like, trust me, like, I get it. But at the same time, I think what you hit it was something that people need to hear, because there's people out there who have a full-time job, who have a family that they rely on them. And for they're just like itching to just jump into this right away and just leave their job, which I did. And I made some mistakes. So I want you guys to hear what Neil just said is it's still a struggle. It's not easy. Like it did take some time, but he had mentors, he had coaching, he had people there backing. And he also had that somewhat of a protection, you know, being a young kid out of school, as opposed to an adult who's already has a career and has family. So just pay attention to that. Now, one thing, Neil, I'm very curious about is when it came to your edge, seems like, and just listening off of talking in this brief moment, it seems like your edge is risk management. It seems like your edge is being able to manage your risk.
Yeah.
And why do you feel like was that easy for you to do, like right off the bat, or because it seems like that's what they saw?
And you know, if you can use the term like optimist, pessimist. I don't love it, but it's, I guess it kind of fits. So I tend to always look at things from a bit of a skeptical mind.
Yes.
You know, and that's just certainly true of my personality. My mother will tell you that. My brother will tell you that. Anyone at my kitchen table when I was growing up will tell you that. So because I'm always looking at that view, the first thing I think about is, you know, where am I wrong about this? How can I be wrong? And sort of what's the opposing view here, right? So I've always been good at seeing that. And it's because of that, it just means that I'm always going to see that. A lot of times I'll see that downside first, which I find it helps to structure a trade. And don't get me wrong. I mean, traders can fit on every end of the spectrum. It's just knowing which side you're on, meaning that's what you can lean on. And the other side of it is what you have to improve on. So for me, I know, before I go into any trade, I know my issue is going to be, how can I manage to hold on longer? How do I not get shaken out? How do I make sure I take all of my setups and not get all kinds of reasons not to get into this trade? You know, it's those types of things that I know for me, I have to figure out. And it's never really about, before I get into a trade, how do I not get blown out here? That's just never my first concern. And of course it was at one point, but now I realize it's just, that's not going to be my problem.
When you said not, you're thinking of that process of not trying to, like, where can I get in where I'm not going to be shaken out right away? When you're thinking that way, you know, it made me think about, when someone's a new trader, and even me, myself, I've been doing this for years, that like when you enter a trade, how hard was it for you, or was it hard at all, where it was hard for, where entering near a support area or shorting near a resistance area, like give us an idea of how you're able to do that. Because I've watched you trade. Actually, I vibe with you more as a trader, because like the way you trade is very similar to me in terms of shorting, at least in small caps. And I see how you short, and it's very, I love it, what you do. So it's hats off to you on there. But at the same time, I'm very curious, like, how long did it take you personally to get to a point where you're like, here's my level, I'm shorting at that level? And were you more of, I'm shorting, like putting orders up there waiting? Or you're more of a trader of, I'm waiting for confirmation, then shorting? Like, give me an idea of where you're at and how long did it take you to get to that point?
So it's a little bit of, it's both. And I feel like, I try to say this on the show as often as possible. Like there's certain setups where it's like, okay, I want the rejection, then I want to join the party to the downside, as opposed to the other way around. And if I really like something and I feel the only way to get into position is to actually take it going into the level, I'll do that. That's where I go back to, I started out doing a lot of market making on penny stocks back when you used to be able to make a rebate, which was like years and years ago. So that foundation of getting in front of what is a support or a big buyer or seller that was actually visible on a level two back in those days was something that I trained on and I made some money on early on in my success. So I had that to lean on. I know there are some setups when it gets very volatile, you do have to wait for the rollover from a risk perspective. There's almost no other way to do it. But and the real moment for me when it came to that get in front of support levels was the very first time where I found myself, and this was like maybe in my third or fourth month of trading. It was the first time I actually had It's a bit of an odd story that I ended up with double my normal maximum share size, which is a bit of an interesting story in and of itself, which maybe we talk about a bit later. But and then I got support broken, and then I had to manage out of a trade when liquidity quite wasn't what I thought it was. And the best part about it was the amount that I lost, which the next day I came in and immediately tripled my size. Because I looked at the situation, I was like, I had more risk than I anticipated. The worst possible thing happened at the level that I wanted, and I did not do as poorly as I would have expected. And so I took a step back, and then I was like evaluating everything, and I said to myself, what this is telling me is I'm not taking advantage of the levels that I have. I have the ability to manage around this level. It could have been much worse. This is why it wasn't. And that means I can do a little bit better when this is working out in the first place. So it was a bit of a happy accident that first time. And that's why sometimes you got to step in, take it on the way into that level, which it's a little different going long into a support level than it is obviously taking a short trade into some into that resistance, just from a risk standpoint. But sometimes you got to do it.
Yeah, now I got to ask, because now you brought that up. I'm very curious. Tell me about that story, because I immediately think, and some people might hear like they doubled their size and then they came back triple the size. Like sometimes that's like revenge trading. So like, I'm very curious on how it was an aha moment for you or a lesson.
So built in, like, you know, we trade on platform here, Day Trade the World, and you know, you have the advantage of a risk manager on the floor. And this is, there's different systems now, because this is obviously a while back. But back then, there was a maximum share size you could have. We still have that now, where you can set a maximum share size per trader, right? So on this particular stock or in this particular market, this is the amount of size that you can take. You also have buying power to see how much actual notional value you can take. But there was a share size restriction. The system would automatically cancel your bids if you went past that. So it gave you some advantages in terms of managing order flow, where it would cancel orders for you. I wouldn't have to worry about managing on the fly. If I got past my number, it would automatically cancel some orders for me. My risk manager saw that I was consistent and wanted me to step my game up, and it doubled my lot size and forgot to tell me. And so I ended up, or some orders didn't cancel. I got way, you know, I got more shares than I anticipated. I managed it. I did take my biggest hit ever that day at that time. And I sort of looked back on it and was like, okay, well, I didn't panic when it happened. I managed to keep a level head. And these were the executions I got to get out. There was more liquidity around that price area that I had identified than maybe even I had anticipated. And so the level was good. It gave me an opportunity to get out because of that support and because of that liquidity, even though it did eventually break through. So all those things, it just gave me more confidence. Yeah. And so when I did jump in to put more size in, it was with a plan, and I was profitable. Going into that, it's like, I mean, I'd been consistent that those couple of months on that same strategy. So I wasn't just throwing the money at it, but it was the aha moment, just because, you know, I reacted better than I anticipated I would. And maybe I was too much of a pessimist before, and I got lucky in that that taught me a lesson.
Interesting. And you didn't know that you had your size increase, right? Until after it was over. So that's a big piece. But yeah, I'm very curious on that.
I should say this here. That's also on me, because when you log in our system, you could see.
Oh, okay.
I could have seen that it was. I just, you know, every single day it's the same thing, and I didn't actually check. So that was 100% on me. I'm not throwing the risk manager the time under the bus, because I should have known.
I understand. Yeah, I agree with that. Now I'm curious on, you trade big caps now, right? And small caps, right? Yes. You still do both. So from your perspective, do you change how you think when you touch like a Tesla or an Apple, when you're trading, let's say, Kodak or any small cap name out there? Just curious on what your thought is on the two, and do you approach them differently? And if so, how?
I mean, I think you have to, because they're just not the same beasts. You understand that you're up against a different set of traders that are going to be, you're taking the trades against at times, and then, well, pretty much all the time, most of the time. So my first rule for trading those, as I know, like Tesla is a perfect example. Anyone that watches the show, if I trade Tesla 5 days out of five, then I'm not profitable, right? So like, I'll trade those small caps, those retracement plays, sometimes those breakouts, and there'll be those every single day when they're in play. There's always something which is giving those types of setup, right? So there's always something for me to look at and trade. But if I'm jumping into Tesla every day, it's not going to work. There's particular setups I'll see where there's some great breakouts that'll happen. It's the same thing if it's like a Beyond Meat. I've had success trading some of these the COVID vaccine names, but it's a very particular setup. I'm only looking for the day after they have positive news, maybe a key support level, a day when it's around the 50 period, and then nothing else in between. So I have harder sets of rules for what makes me look at it that day, which is the first sticking point. I think, and the other thing we should say too is, you know, we have an entire trading floor behind us. And one of the advantages that Sean, Brendan, and I have, which I'm not sure gets said enough, is we've all been around a trading floor for a long time. And it's not just our own trades and experiences and setups that we've taken advantage of. It's the fact that we've seen a lot of other traders who trade differently from us, who have their own fresh ideas, who've made their own sets of mistakes. And, you know, like we'll talk all the time and you have the opportunity to learn from a bunch of other people. And I think I'm trying to stress this. It's like, this is all of the help that I've gotten to be successful. And, you know, one of the reasons why I think people gravitate towards the show is that that's what we're trying to give people. Because sitting home, trading by yourself with no one to bounce ideas off of, making all those mistakes on your own, incredibly difficult. Trading hard enough without having the ability to lean on other people for their experiences.
What's your advice on leaning on others without getting like losing your own ideas? Like being like, have your own idea, and then I listen to Neil and Neil says the exact opposite, and then I don't do my idea. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, that's always going to be a big challenge. My general rule of thumb is don't take someone else's trade. There was a trader who was on our floor who is he used to train as well. He was a risk manager as well. And you know, he used to do an exercise that we don't really do anymore, but he would do this with trainees where when they were in the simulator, what he would do is he would just punch you into a position and then he would say, manage the position. It'd be long, short, a random stock at a random price. And then it's like, give it to this person and give it to that person. Then no one knows why they're getting, they just get the position long or short in stock at a certain price. And then when you see, and the whole idea behind it is when you see how differently everyone handles that same situation, they got it at the same moment in the same stock at the same price, you start to understand that everyone is reading all of these signals differently. And I think once you get that lesson hardwired into you, it's a little bit easier to understand that I already know this to be true, right? But not everyone understands this lesson. I already know that Sean and I can have the same entry on a break. We look at the same level, same break, take it the same way. There's 0% chance we'll have we might have the same stop area, that's possible. But you know, like at the far end, Sean's probably gonna hold a lot longer than me in terms of how far he's gonna look for the winning trade. I'm probably much more likely, as it works in the money for me, to maybe slide my stop a few times around and have a different risk management approach to it. So I already know those things going into it, but that came from that foundation of knowing, do not, and you do, this is easier on a trading floor where you're constantly bombarded with other people's ideas. You just see that they don't work. Because what happens to you when you're here and a trainee is you're gonna hear an idea, you're gonna try it, and it's gonna not work, it won't work for you, you don't do it well. So I learned that lesson both in a simulator and both being on a floor. And that's part of our experiences too. And we always tell people, we're trying to give you our thought process as well. That's the biggest thing about Trader TV Live. You know, is it's we're gonna show you the executions and that's great. But we're going to tell you both in the pre-market why we like the stock. Why are we even looking at it today? You know, where's our entry points? What are the key levels that we're watching? What am I going to do? What am I not going to do in the stock today? Do I not want to go long for these reasons or whatever? And this is why. And that's the key point, right? So it tells people you have to have that why. You have to have your own reasons. You build those, and if they happen to be similar to someone else, or they happen to give you some kind of feedback, which gives you an aha moment to your own strategy, that's great. Just don't take exactly someone else's trade and think it's going to work for you.
Yeah, I think what you said that I didn't hear until you said it today, it didn't really click with me, but it's so true. You're in a room full of traders, and you're in a room full of traders from the beginning of your journey. And so you see, even the ones who are successful, you see them lose on trades. And unlike a retail trader like myself and other people who are listening, they just have Twitter, right? And everyone's a winner on Twitter. So since everyone's a winner on Twitter, you might be very judgmental on yourself whenever you make mistakes and you take losses. And that's what's great about your show, because like you said, you share everything. You get to see executions, you get to see wins, losses. But I love it you said that, because I'm like, yeah, that question would normally, for other people who are retail traders, they're like, well, you just got to ignore, you know, just don't log on to Twitter. But for you, you're around people, but you immediately learn right away that, hey man, we're all human. We all have our own plans. We all judge it differently. We all make mistakes. We all win and lose. So you got to stick with your own plan. So I appreciate you saying that, man. And one thing I wanted to ask you, Neil, that you brought up earlier, is when you do trade something like a Tesla, an Apple, whatever stock it may be, the revolving theme that you said was it has to be a specific setup for you. And it has to be something that, you know, it has to like call your name pretty much. So you might not be trading in between those times where it doesn't, but when you do, it's because you're confident in that setup. Let me ask you this. Have you found setups to be universal in terms of all names can pretty much, as long as they have the setup? I'm just curious.
I can't say that there's a single setup that I would look at that applies across all equities that I'll watch. Principles of them, sometimes, certainly, yes, right? But just not, it's, I never find it to be that simple. There's always some kind of an adjustment to be made. And I think that's where, you know, changing up your risk levels can be part of it. Because, you know, look, paper trading is great, and you should always, always learn on as little capital as possible is the best way to put it. Because you can only paper trade to a certain point, right? At some point, you have to put things live, both from an execution standpoint and also from a psychological standpoint. So that's important. But always just sort of size differently, right? Like, and the other thing too is, you know, don't overtrade some of those names. You know, if I know the other thing, I don't trade like a Tesla or one of those other types of big cap names unless I have a catalyst. I also know that if I'm making, you know, 4 or 5 trades in that in a day, that's also got to be a no-no for me. Like maybe 1 or 2, I'll see some trades that I like, but it's just that's not what I'm good at. Whereas there's traders on the floor, well, that's all they will do. Directional momentum stocks that maybe follow the market heavily. That's their game. And they might trade 6 or 7 symbols, be multiple ones at a time, and have 10, 20 different directional trades in those. That's not me. So I know that I'm over trading if it's more than a couple. And yeah, so there's no universal setups in my opinion, but there's certainly adjustments that you can make, but you have to find those for yourself.
Understand. What's one setup that you can share with people here on the show? And I'm sure you've traded this live anyway. So just curious on, and if you don't know that he's on live every day, so make sure to watch Neil because he'll show you these. But just on for people who are listening who might not have seen you yet, like they're probably thinking, well, what's one setup that I can maybe start with that's easy to understand? Like, could you briefly explain something real quick?
Yeah, so I mean, there's certainly a couple that are going to stand out. If you see the show, I mean, we talk a lot about gappers that move you know, throughout the day, and I think you know, I'm sure, you know, when Brendan came on here, he probably talked a little bit about one of our a retracement sort of strategy. But another one which has stood out to me has been if you get a real parabolic move, and ideally, you know, maybe you get like 2 or 3 halts on the way up, something a little bit crazy. I've just found that, you know, after you get that first, you know, halt of retracement to the downside and then some consolidation. Now, first things first, you know, when something has gone up 300, 400%, short squeeze, low float, it's going to be dangerous. You're probably paying for the locates in the first place. But if you do get a consolidation below what was like a previous resistance, maybe a halt level on the way up, if you're fast and you're looking for it, there's usually a quick consolidation drop right into one of the, you know, sort of earlier breakout points that I've been able to take. Now, the caveat here was, in order to make this trade win for me, I had, like, there's all kinds of mistakes that I would make when I first started taking this trade. Like, one of them was thinking it would retrace all the way, right? So I was trying to hit the home run. Stock was up 400%, and I caught it. It's come like halfway, and usually a lot of times they eventually go all the way back. I thought that's what I was going to get. But that particular setup, because I'm taking the first true price discovery point, right? So when it's settled down and it's no longer halting every 2 minutes. And from there, I just find it's like the first quick short. And if it's only 10%, it's 10%. And if it's 5%, it's 5%. And if it's 15%, it's 15%. But everyone's a little bit different. You just have to work the levels. And I found that percentage-wise, it's a fantastic one. But discipline matters so much more. I'm never trying to get caught in the next halt. If I see it going into a halt, for or against me, that's a signal to get out of that particular trade. But it's got a high winning percentage so long as I stick to my rules.
Perfect. And listen to what he said. Your risk management is key in that setup, like for sure. Because you could easily get huge slippage if it halts against you. So just be careful, especially with low flow, especially if it's rotating. Just be careful.
But I want to jump in because I feel like in that, look, risk is a huge deal, and I never want people to be misled about how risky that trade is. If you're not looking at a level 2 or don't have an indication of when a stock is about to halt or what that means or how you can get out right before it does, if you don't have those tools available, you shouldn't be taking trades like that, right? Because if you get caught in successive halts, the amount that you can lose is astronomical, and you always want to be in control of your own account. So if you don't have the tools available to you, then maybe you shouldn't be doing something like that. If you don't have direct market access, if you don't have fast execution, if you can't see a level 2 or know what the halt level is as it comes into it, then maybe just back off.
I agree with you 100%. Yeah, I appreciate you saying that. And just curious, are you ready before to wrap this up? Are you ready for the closing bell round, my friend?
Hey, let's go for it.
Awesome, awesome. So what's your favorite book that has helped you with trading? And it doesn't have to actually be a trading book.
So I always say thinking in bets. Like I had a bit of a, I played poker a little bit when I started trading. It was like at the time, you know, my girlfriend who I was living with worked in the evenings and I would come home for day trading and I would log online. And that was when you could actually make money doing things like Omaha high low when people didn't understand the game. So I would literally trade in the day and I would play poker. So that resonates with me. Annie Duke wrote the book, but it's about decision making. And it's evaluating your decisions. So it really speaks to me. Objectivity in evaluating your decisions is everything. People often care about the result far too much when they're analyzing their decisions. And you got to understand how much luck matters. And you never want to be praising yourself or praising a decision you made that worked out but was a bad one. You know, you chase something on the river. Look, man, you chase a gut shot straight with horrible pot odds and it hits for you. And you're happy about it and you're celebrating it, you're probably going to end up making that same mistake in the future when it's just not a good play.
Amen, man. Amen. What was the book called again?
Thinking in Bets by Annie Duke.
Thinking in Bets. Okay, thank you so much. And I'll have that in the show notes for everyone if you're curious. What's your best trading memory that you have?
Okay, so this is going to be an interesting one. There was one particular day, and you know, I don't want to call out any other trader, but there was a trader who at the time, Day Trader of the World, was basically the big fish. And he was visiting our trading office, and you know, we're in a short trade. I was in a short trade, and I basically, so I was in a long trade that reversed into a short on a liquidity vacuum to the upside. So it got squeezed to the upside. I had a bunch of orders out because I was market making, and I went from long my max default to short 3x my max default. And I will never forget because Sean was in the other room training some traders at the time, and I just started screaming. Like, I'm not, like, there's no humility here. Like, I was basically freaking out and everyone in the room knew about it. And that one trader, he yelled at me. He's like, "What the heck is wrong with you?" And he goes, "Is this, you're in this thing?" And he's like, "Yeah." And I was like, he's like, "What's your price?" And I'm like, I said my price. He's like, "Well, what's wrong with you? That's a winner." And I calmed down and I looked at it and I was like, "Oh my gosh, this is a great fill. Like, I know it's more size than I wanted, but this is a great position." And it was just that one little moment of calming me down. Like I said, I've gotten a lot of help in my career. That day, if he's not there, I probably panic. I was panicking actually in that moment, if I'm being honest with myself, and I am. But I got lucky, and it was just that little moment, and it was so much, again, it's just about those eye openers, right? And every time, it's like that shock of it's not as bad as you think when you're in one of those moments. And then the next time you're just more confident taking a bigger position or holding something, those things that come into play on a daily basis.
Absolutely, man. I love that story. Thanks for sharing that, man. The next question may be a redundant. So if you just want to say it's the same as that last one, I can understand that. But is there a difference between your best memory and an aha moment? Because I know you've been throwing out other aha moments, but do you have another one you can just throw out there?
Okay, so this will be a little bit different for me. I'd say a lot of times I'll give this analogy to traders when they want to start out. And when we're telling them, if you're a prop trader, like you're trading the firm's capital like we do here with Day Trade the World, so you have to earn the right to do that. You're a trainee, you go live, and then once you go live, you got to graduate, you got to make some coin. So you got to keep in mind that there's a process to your to what you're going to do. And all traders go through the stages of figuring it out, making money, sustaining success, and then going into a slump. And you go through that many times. And it was the second, or well, technically like the third time that I went through a slump where you're making consistent money and then you, all of a sudden you're not. It was coming out of that. And it wasn't like, it wasn't the first time, it wasn't the second, it was the third time that it happened to me. And I did it on a new market. Like, I'd never traded to TSX before. And then I actually started making money on Toronto. And it was like, okay, well, obviously the ability to adjust when something stops making money for you is gonna determine whether or not you have a career in this game. And so you do that a couple of times and it's like, all right, now I'm not afraid this is only going to be like a 2-year job or a 5-year job or whatever it might be. I actually have a shot to do this for my life.
Cool, man. I appreciate you saying that too. And if you like have a favorite indicator, what would that be if you even have one?
I have you up on my charts. And I just feel like for me, indicators are about what other people see, not what I'm seeing. So I care about what others' decision making processes might be, and how I can use that to my advantage when I'm looking for a trade. So to the extent that I find a lot of people have it on their chart and it gives some psychological levels to people, it's probably always going to be there for me. But I'm just much more of a find previous support and resistance kind of thing. I think there's an interesting new one, the volume profile, which I think is pretty cool, that I'm trying to incorporate into my trading as well. And I think that's one that I think is getting some widespread acceptance and more traders are looking at it. So it's more important to understand it.
Understand. Thanks for sharing that too. Because volume profile is actually, you're right. It's starting to blow up. Like everyone's starting to share it now. Yeah. And the last question is finally, where is the best place that people can ask you questions or reach out to you? Where can they find you?
Well, I mean, tune in every single day, Trade TV Live. And the thing is, we have a chat on the show, and you know, Sean Brennan and I do our best to try to answer questions there. I'm on Twitter, Trade TV at Trade TV Neil. Sean Brennan and myself, we're all on Twitter. You can tweet at us during the show. And I tell people this: if I'm answering tweets and DMs, it's like, I get it. At 11 o'clock, we're in trades. We're doing a live show. So it might take a while to get that response in, but we try to do our best. But certainly during the show, we get questions all the time that we'll answer live on air while the stock is moving. So, I mean, that's obviously the best place to try to contact us.
Absolutely. And they do answer the questions while they're trading, which is not easy to do while you're trading, just FYI. So, Neil, thank you so much, man, for being here today. Thank you for sharing your story, your journey. And I know there's going to be people out there who are going to be able to take away a lot of little golden nuggets that you just delivered. So I appreciate your time, my friend.
Hey, thanks for having me, Alex. It was a pleasure, absolute pleasure.